Hey, you guys, welcome to Regardless. I am so excited to have you here. Regardless is the go-to hub for tips and tools to keep you going, babe, reminding you that you've got this. Ready?
Anna Lee.
Hi, darling.
Hello, beautiful. I am so excited. I've literally been waiting for this moment for like months now. And just beyond honored that you're coming on to Regardless. Seriously.
My pleasure, babe. My pleasure. It's going to be good.
I'm excited. Should we just get into it?
Let's do it.
Are you ready for whatever like just shows up today?
Everything.
Anna Lee, welcome to Regardless. It's really an absolute honor to have you on this platform. And for those who might not know, Anna Lee Howling is a performance coach with over 20 years of experience. She's worked with leaders in business, elite athletes, and even members of the armed forces, including the ex-UK Special Forces. Anna Lee specializes in transitional support, helping her clients break through self-imposed limitations to achieve their goals and move forward with confidence and a more fulfilling life. Anna Lee, like literally the moment that I found your profile, I was just like, thank God, this is a breath of fresh air. And for me, like as a 26-year-old, it's so important to surround myself with women who I look up to and I feel supported and safe by, especially on social media. So the fact that you're here and I get to share this with you is just like a dream.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for having me here. What an awesome introduction. And it's an honor. It's an honor to get to share with you. And I think we have a real mutual enthusiasm for this space. So it's going to be.
I'm super excited. And it is really interesting. You know, my platform is dedicated to 20-something women. And I think one of the main things that we all have in common is that we're really exposed to so much noise on social media, whether it's, you know, the perfect body to, you know, trends, sticking to a certain routine to be optimized. And recently, like I've been having a really hard time with this and like finding time to find space for myself. And I remember I shared this with you like on our first intro call together. And I'm not sure like if you remember what you told me, but if you do, like you said like a really awesome metaphor about like how we, when we look up to celebrities like Beyonce, and I'm not sure if you remember this, but if you do, like I'll give you the mic.
I think I'll sort of ad lib it again, but yeah, that we have this aspiration to be like someone so unique, and we're like, you know, Beyonce or Adele, or I'm picking a few people here that are so successful and iconic because of their uniqueness. You know, no one sounds, you recognize the Beyonce song because no one sounds like her, you know, and no one maybe writes in the same emotional way as Adele. And so we have this, I want to be just like them, but then we don't because we're afraid of being anything other than the same. We want to try and desperately fit in and conform. And like you say, have the perfect, in inverted commas, body, because then that means I'm the same as everybody else. I'm not being judged. So it's this like constant paradox push-pull of here's your aspirational role model who's a really unique individual in whatever regard. You know, we're given these success stories in business, in, I know you're an entrepreneur as well, like, you know, everything that you're doing, and you're like, cool. And that by nature person is individually broken down some few barriers. We call it glass ceilings, we'll call it whatever. But then fundamentally, I think everything we're being pushed is to be good, and that means coloring within the lines. You know, it doesn't mean going outside of that. So I feel like we do have this very real struggle of, well, which is it? Because I think I want to be this unique person, but yet if I do that, I'm at real risk of being rejected because that means that I'm like not normal, or, you know, I don't fit into any category. I think it's really hard.
Yeah, this is super interesting. And recently, Anna Lee, this is crazy, but I was in Chicago for a work trip and I had kind of a triggering experience with a manager. And I think this goes out to all of my women where, you know, I do stand out in a lot of ways just because of my positive outlook on life. And in a way, I guess I'm standing out and I'm coloring outside of the box. And I think a lot of people, especially men, aren't really used to that. And this was brought to my attention, and it was, you know, phrased in the way that it was communicated to me was that it was like wrong. And in that moment, I kind of felt like re-triggered by all of these things that you're talking about, like maybe I am too much. And in that moment, like I really paused, I paused and I freezed. And I dimmed my light in that moment and I didn't know what to say. And like the automatic shift that happened was like, how can I fit in? How can I not be me? Like, not that I'm consciously like fully thinking of that, but I did feel emotions of that to where I was like, oh, how can I make him feel better? And that's like when I started to feel this aspect of almost like people pleasing and conforming. And I think as women, unfortunately, this is something that we all have in common.
You have just, like, first, I just want to say I'm really sorry that happened. And I can see in your eyes, people are listening, I can see in your eyes how much that hurt you. I can see how emotional you were and you are when you're telling it. It makes me feel emotional because it's just too many times that, not to minimize your experience, but I resonate and I wish I didn't. You know, and I'm really sad that for you mid-20s and I'm 43, this is still happening to you. And I hate the idea that anyone... You were afraid in that moment. You were made to feel afraid by a man that is not only a man, but is in a position of seniority to you in this organization, right? So what that means is they hold rank. And what that means is your psychological safety or physiological safety at work is kind of not even, like you're not on an even keel with this individual. So if this person threatens your safety, you know, I can't do well at work, I'm not going to succeed, I can't pay my bills, like that is a real threat, it's a real fear, and you were made to feel fearful in that moment. And what you just described was the perfect definition of trauma. And I have people coming to me all the time that are like, well, but my trauma wasn't big enough, or I didn't serve in the armed forces, you know, like, which is I think where a lot of the times we still associate PTSD and trauma. And of course that's true, and these people are extraordinarily brave, but what happened to you just then was traumatic. And I don't say that lightly. And you were made to feel frightened and question yourself. We start second guessing ourselves because I guarantee you don't know the exact thing that he was referring to. Like, was it the way I had my hair? Was it was it like the thing I put in the presentation? Was it like, you don't know which bit he, and so what this means is we're like, shit, I don't know what part of me was offensive or let's, you know, not a good girl or not polite. Let's go back to all the conditioning. And so what we do is we start, like, to your point, you named it, dimming my light, like curling in on myself, just being a bit smaller all round, because that might keep me safer. That might stop this happening again. And that is a trauma response. You named it as freeze. You froze in that moment. The other thing that kicked in was fawn. Yeah. And fawn is the lesser discussed. Thank goodness it's getting more like, you know, kind of press is coming up more on social. This is where social is good. Like things like the fawn trauma response is getting light, which I'm really delighted about, because for women in particular, I'm going to put my head out here and own it. I think predominantly women in particular, we do go into a fawn trauma response, which is what you named of kind of placating. How can I make him feel more comfortable is what you said. Like, what can I meet his needs? So, and the reason you were doing that, it's not because you're Machiavelli or inauthentic or, you know, any of the things, but because you don't want to be back in that position again. You don't want to feel afraid again. And so the reason we people please, the reason we have our inner critic and all of these things is that's like our sort of last defense, our last barrier, if you like, before we have to go into a trauma response. Like, who wants to feel that frightened that we have to go there? So I just don't want you, because the thing that happens is the bit that we take a great big spoonful of, like Mary Poppins, is shame. And we swallow that shame down. And that's what's left behind of something traumatic like that. So there will be something ticking away in the back of your mind, probably, because I could see it in your eyes, which is you still don't know exactly what it is. And it's that like confusion. And then there's this sort of collusion that happens, almost where you kind of colluded with the treatment that you know wasn't right, because but you didn't want it to happen again, so you then thinking about how to not make it happen, which is kind of almost being nice to the perpetrator, right? So I deal with victims, trigger warning, I'm going to talk about sexual assault for anyone that doesn't know this bit. I work extensively in sexual assault, but people say to me all the time, it's always a inverted commas, a gray area, but I kissed them earlier, but I'd had a drink, I knew them, we shared college, whatever, you know, a friend of a friend or something like that. There's often a link, very, very often some kind of link. And or after an assault has happened, why would I kiss them afterwards? Why would I reply to messages? Why did I wish them a happy birthday when they'd done that to me? And the answer is born trauma response. You were terrified. That is the answer. So I just want to kind of hold that for you. I don't want to use the word normalize because I feel how painful it is. I just want to hold that and offer that.
I really appreciate you saying that. And it is really crazy because I've had a couple of these moments pop up in like the last couple of months, like maybe three experiences. I'm not sure why it's all happening right now. And in each like moment,
well, I can tell you, it's to get you the fuck out of that corporate world, my babe. But like, that's the universe being like, this isn't for you, darling. Get out. But yeah.
I know. I'm yeah. Like working on it.
Universe will keep. I mean, that was obviously completely unacceptable, that behavior, but I would suggest that the universe is also like, Skylar, this is just too small for you, my darling.
Totally. But like, even looking at some of like my personal relationships, and it's always, I think, with people, especially as women, that we see in our mind's eye as like higher ranking, like you said, like even with boyfriends, parents, or whatever it might be. And like, even for my more personal relationships, and I've had that like almost trauma response where I freeze, I notice within myself that I almost start to like gaslight myself, where I'm like, maybe I'm being too sensitive. Maybe I'm being too dramatic. And then from there, like the way that I handle it is automatically going to like, how can I show up to make this person feel better? And I'm just curious to understand from you as an expert, like, why as women, like, do we people please? And what even does that mean if we break it down?
Yeah, well, there's two ways I'm going to approach this. I'm going to give you, first of all, kind of, I've been, you and I have discussed this, I'm writing at the moment, there'll be a big announcement. I hate people like, I can't tell you, I'm going to fucking tell you. Like, yes. I'm writing a book. The big announcement will come out, I think, in September. I'll be able to tell you what it's called and everything, but it is about all these things we're discussing right now. And through the process of writing, what I hadn't anticipated was perhaps the emotional journey it would take me back on, but honestly, things I thought I had dealt with. And I include in that stuff that I had absolutely blocked out, which is trauma. But one of the things, the sort of conclusions, or maybe not concluded, just a hypothesis I've got at the moment, is as women, we are taught from such an early age not to trust ourselves. Be a good girl. Go and hug Uncle so-and-so. Go and give them a hug. Abandon your body. You know, go and, oh no, come on, we don't act like that. Don't behave like that. Let's be a good girl. Don't say that to them. Don't upset them. Oh, you know, and then all these other things that kind of happen. And I'm being a bit stereotypical, but, you know, I've got an 8-year-old daughter. I'm a single mom with an 8-year-old daughter. I have to stop myself calling her a good girl. Like, it's so entrenched. And sometimes I do it, you know, and it's like, oh, there's a good girl for tidying up, you know, like, or whatever it might be, like taking her place up. And it's like, no, like, I'm trying not to reward her on that. But it's so deeply entrenched. And I'm like awake to it, right? And I still do it. So it really is endemic. And I've got to this place where I think that as women, like, there's this whole thing about, hey, queen, let me, you know, you and I do actually polish each other's crowns, right? Always. And there's this huge movement of we should do that. But for you and I, we're talking about this now, for you and I to really put ourselves out there, and one of the reasons we don't, so one of the reasons we people please is because it is a woman that will be the first to come and tear me or you down. When I get trolled, it's a woman. You know, like, sometimes it'll be a bloke saying something shitty and unskillful, but it's, oh, who does she think she is? You know, you're like, wow, cheers, girls.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I've been hard enough. Like, thank you. So, but there's this, like, I feel like we're in this sort of patriarchal Hunger Games where the patriarchy is stood outside just laughing at us all, tearing each other down all the time. You know, like, we kind of take two steps up and then one of us comes in and is like, no, stop doing that. You're too much. You know, and I was interviewing somebody the other day for the book, I won't say who, and the real expert in a very interesting subject area, and they were like, what is too much?
Yeah.
And actually, I've never really, right? I see your face. What is too much? What is too much? I don't even know. Like, I don't even know what too much is. And I mean, sometimes, you know, I do definitely think it. I'm like, oh, that's a bit too much, you know, but like, I, But what is it? Because then again, we have this like complete swing of, you know, we would never have had innovation if someone didn't ask, you know, wasn't too much asking questions. Someone didn't try too much in an area. If, you know, even like we look at like romantic things, like the biggest romantic movies, like if that was real life, it'd be too much. Like, but yet we're afraid of this invisible foe too much that none of us know what it is. And it's only women. So that's one area, is that we're honestly, if we put it into like the idea of the Hunger Games, like we're fighting too much, which none of us know what it is, but we're fighting one another all the time. And it's shame, these like kind of shameful messages and conditioning. And I think shame is like the last bastion of the patriarchy. I write about this. Mm. I really now believe that, because it's a way of keeping us small. It's a way of keeping us fearing too much. That's what it is. And the more that we have any shame about owning our truth, being authentic, keeping the light on, and the system supports shame, like you experience, oh, that was a bit too much, you know, like, oh gosh, I better get back into my box. But the other thing is, we haven't been given a benchmark system of, right, that is too much, just so you know, but really nice, like Goldilocks, like, I don't know if you have that story in the States, but like,
yeah, of course.
It's like, that one's a bit too hot, that one's a bit too cold, that one's a bit too hot. Like, none of us have that. We don't know what just right is. So it's this really exhausting, anxiety-fueled state. Like you said, you go straight into, right, well, what do I need to do? What's the perfect recipe? What's the perfect porridge, Goldilocks, to make sure this person feels comfortable and seen and that I'm kind and da-da-da, and I've done all these things and they're having their needs met and then me, and like, oh my God. And it's this huge thing that we're living through all the time. So why do I think we people please? Why do I think we self-betray? Why do I think we wear masks and not in a Machiavelli way? I think because we've been taught from such a young age not to trust ourselves. Because we don't know where we should be. You know, this is this whole thing. And that's where I think this creeps in. And then to break it down sort of a little bit more, the trauma response of pleasing. Like I mentioned, when you're going to go into trauma, whatever might be happening, like if someone came in to attack me now into this room, I'm going to go into one of five responses. There's fight, flight, sorry, run for the hills, freeze, stop, flop, pass out on the spot. I always say, you know, you see the little Impala deers and they like see a predator and they flop. Or I use the example of like a groom at the altar, you know, the funny videos where he gets overwhelmed and you see them like pass out, that's flop. And the last one is fawn. And fawn, I honestly don't think I know a woman that hasn't at some point in their life fawned, whether
so
it was in.
Can you break down what that means? Like, can you give me an example?
Absolutely. So again, I'm going to use a sexual assault example. So for anyone who listen, please feel free to skip this. So in a sexual assault example, I'm going to give you a real one. I'm just going to need to be very careful what I'm saying here. Mm-hmm. So I work with somebody who had an experience of being sexually assaulted. But then afterwards, I mentioned this person, after the horrendousness of the assault, the perpetrator went to be intimate with them again and kiss them, and they returned the kiss. And they also returned some messages afterwards. Now that's because during the assault, which is probably the most horrendous thing I've ever heard in my whole life, your brain, the prefrontal cortex, which I'm tapping the front of my forehead right now, people that can't see, that goes offline, your prefrontal cortex. So all of your blood is being rerouted to your amygdala, so your limbic system, which is your spinal part. Now, your prefrontal cortex is stuff like lists, times, dates. Your Broca's areas just behind it is language. So then people say, I don't remember what he said. I can't remember. Right. But I remember the shirt he was wearing. Or, you know, I'm going to give like a more flippant example, but like an ex's aftershave, someone wearing it walks past and you're immediately taken back to that moment. So, you know, a lot of time people will say, I don't remember what he said, but I could draw you the room exactly. You know, well, there's some details that you keep, because your prefrontal cortex has gone offline, so it's not needed right now. I don't need to remember what I need in the shops. I don't need to remember my lecture timetable tomorrow. What I need to do is stay alive.
Wow.
So the key thing I want everyone listening to this to understand, because the reason we feel ashamed for fawning, we don't understand this one key piece of information. You do not get to choose your trauma response. It is chosen for you. It fires so much faster than cognitive thought. Your limbic system, your amygdala, the reason we go there for survival, all the blood, everything, because it is so quick. It's designed to keep you alive. Now, in a context of sexual assault, let's just say I'm about to be sexually assaulted and someone is much bigger and stronger than me, and I'm locked in somewhere, okay? So I can't fight them off, gone. I can't freeze, it's not going to do me a great deal of good in this situation. Flopping, passing out, possibly in a huge amount of trouble there. And the other one, running, I can't run, I'm trapped in a situation. The only one left is fawn. My only hope of staying alive, because my body, I don't know if I can stay alive or not through this, is to somehow act as if I'm, in inverted commas, going along with it. I was up for it, right? I was up for it. Oh, she was up for it. Oh, she was up for it. Like, no, I wasn't. And believe me, you get taken over. It's like Aurora in Cinderella going up the stairs under a curse. Like, that's what's happening to you. So that's what I mean. The key piece of information I want everyone listening to this to understand is you did not pick your trauma response. It was picked for you to keep you alive. If you're listening to this, you're still alive. So it means it worked. What it also means is you've been left with trauma and shame because you don't know why you would allow it in inverted commas or act like you were up for it. I just read a book from someone who said that her first sexual experience was sexual assault and she had an orgasm. That also can happen. It's called non-cordance. You can orgasm during rape. Not enough people know that. That is again a safety mechanism. It's not because you're loving it. And the confusion that can come from that, the confusion, because we'd sold this Disney tale of, well, unless it's butterflies and, you know, it's so hard to come. And if you can orgasm really easily, then you must be so into them. Like the shame you would come away with of, well, what's wrong with me? Why did I allow it? What's wrong with me? Then that's when this really kicks in. I can't trust myself. I can't trust my choice. I can't trust myself to get myself out of situations. Quite often, maybe we've had a drink or something else, or like, why did I allow that? Never, you know, never the perpetrator. You read these cases in the press all the time. It's never, oh, they were drinking, or you know, it's like the shame that's loaded into these statements. So I see you shaking your head, and I think this is resonating really hard for you. This has happened to me, you know, and it's, I think, which is why I can speak about this seemingly so easily, but I also deal with people every day, and the stories that I hear and that I've heard, family members, you know, like all sorts of, and then the collusion afterwards as well, like that person sending you the message and then you feel terrible that you've replied. You don't understand what's happened. Whilst the prefrontal cortex is offline as well, because that's why we have the gaps. That's why we can't remember what they said. That's why when people are like, but what happened? And you're like, I don't know. And your brain starts playing tricks. I think it was this. I think I did this. I think I went there, but I don't know. Oh, well, you must have been drinking. No, trauma. And then here's the other thing that trauma does. So it's done its good job. It's kept us alive, okay? We have to remember that our body's trying to do right by us. So as I say, if we're listening to this, it did keep you alive, right? The bit that's always missing is that you didn't choose it. You weren't consciously leading them on up for it, whatever you want to call it. The gray area is the other thing I get a lot of the time. It was never a gray area. Put your best friend in that exact situation and you tell me if they did anything wrong or if they were up for it. You rerun that exact situation. Or if we're talking about an earlier memory, you pick a niece, a nephew, a friend's kid, anyone that you know that's that exact age, you run the exact same scenario through your head and you watch that child, adolescent, and you tell me if they did a single thing that made them deserve that. And the answer is no. We find it so hard to cultivate compassion for ourselves. So that exercise of running them through with somebody else that we love or we know and we care about, and you can watch their innocence in that situation, allows us to create more compassion for ourselves and understand what's happened to us. And the thing that then can also happen, the recording was going on the whole time from your prefrontal cortex. So although it wasn't active, I can't remember what you said, it was actually recording and tagging. It was tagging things that we might need later, because right now in this moment, in this trauma, I just need to stay alive. So what I don't need is loads and loads and loads of thoughts, just need to stay alive. It's very much a visceral experience in that moment. When we come out of that moment, we have these memory blanks or blocks. We start questioning ourselves, even like this. So that fawn example that you gave me, that's like, what did I do? Where was I too much? Like, how do I need to tone it down? What should I change? Like all of these things, we start questioning ourselves because we haven't got all of the evidence available. We haven't got all of the facts at hand. Now, as we go through our life, let's just say that I was assaulted by a man that was wearing a red t-shirt. I'm giving a very blithe example. I could be going along. It could be 8 years later, and there could be a glimpse of someone out of my right eye that's wearing a t-shirt in the exact same red, and I am back, and I'm having a panic attack, lying on the floor of a cafe, and I don't know why. Mm. And then I'm humiliated and ashamed as to what's wrong with me, because how could this be related? And then I think I can't go out to cafes anymore, so I start ordering in, and then I stop going out to the supermarket and I order that as well. And then I tell myself that I don't like going on planes at certain times of day because it's too. And maybe I won't go to Italy anymore, even though it was my favorite holiday. And instead, I'll just take the train somewhere because that feels safer. And that is trauma.
As you know, my loves, I've been going through a massive life change. With my recent layoff from 9 to 5 world, I've jumped actually headfirst into self-employment and full-time entrepreneurship with Regardless. And let me tell you, my loves, it is totally okay to ask for help, to lean on your community, and yes, your favorite products to move forward. And since the layoff, my loves, I've been in scaling my business. I've been in total full throttle mode. It's been a multitasking marathon over here. But the exciting part of all of this, for the past 2 weeks, I've been incorporating something into my routine, and that is Magic Mind mental performance shots. These little shots have been a total game changer for me. Unlike other supplements, which we all know I take a lot of, they do not leave me feel jittering. There's no crash afterwards. I feel like there's steady energy. This helps me keep calm and focused. And best of all, it doesn't mess with any of my sleep. It's so easy, you guys, to fit Magic Mind into my day. I just pair it with my morning coffee and bam, I am locked in, ready to tackle my day. Honestly, Magic Mind has helped me really enter that founder mode. And can we also talk about how much I freaking love the Magic Mind team? They literally feel like family. Magic Mind is not just a supplement, my loves. It is actually a real upgrade that has been literally game-changing for my energy, mood, and productivity. If you're looking for a little extra boost to help you shine, especially in your personal growth journey, Magic Mind is the way. If you'd like to try, please use code REGARDLESS for 20% off Magic Mind productivity shots and 48% off a 3-month subscription. We've got this, babes.
And I think what I'm hearing a lot from this is this like idea of self-abandonment. And just to like see the correlation of people pleasing and like approval seeking, which, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, sounds like it is a form of self-abandonment.
Yeah, it's because if we've experienced trauma, which most of us have, we question ourselves, we're doubting ourselves. So therefore, if I can't trust me, I better refer to other people. And so the people pleasing is, I can't trust myself. I don't want to be ostracized. I've got all this shame inside of me. If people really knew about me, if they really knew who I was and how shameful I am, they would chuck me aside. So the best thing for me to do is to fit in, is to try and meet these standards or requirements and color within the lines. That's the safest way for me not to be faced with a conflict situation or a potential conflict. So people pleasing is, like I say, it's almost like the thing that we trigger quite sensibly, right? Before we may be pushed into a situation where I have to trigger a trauma response. And I do think this is something that most women bear most of the time.
It's horrible.
But when you understand it, the only thing I could say is when you understand why that happened, why maybe you don't have, when you replay, like I say, if you have a scenario and you're replaying it with somebody else in it that you love and care about, and you realize that you did nothing wrong, whether you do something like I do EMDR as a technique or something else that is bringing back your prefrontal cortex in those moments and having your faculties online. That's why they say when you're anxious or you're having a panic attack, to do counting, breath counts.
Yep, yep.
No one explains this. The reason why is it's keeping your prefrontal cortex online. So you don't go completely off into this like full trauma response. See, no one says why. If they told you why, you'd be like, oh, right, I'll do that more. Now I get it. That's why we count when we're feeling panicked, because we're staying in our sort of more cerebral, like cerebral kind of cognitive center. That's why we do breath counting. Going for a walk because your eyes are laterally scanning the horizon, again, is keeping your prefrontal cortex online, but no one tells you why.
This is crazy. I mean, even thinking about some of my experiences medically, super weird. I grew up
like having like anxiety whenever I would go into the doctor's office or at hospitals. And then I was on Accutane for I think like most of high school. And when you're on Accutane, you have to get blood work like every month to make sure like you're not pregnant and your body's handling the medication fine. Then I think in sixth grade, I got, this was like in sixth grade, I got hit by a bocce ball and it was very traumatic, like passed out to the floor, like unconscious. It was like 1 centimeter away from my temple and I wouldn't have been here. But like that whole journey was extremely scary for me. But then through high school, I kind of got over the fear a little bit by like exposure to going to the hospital like every month. And then a couple of years went by where I wasn't really, going to the hospital. And then recently, I've had like a couple of like health issues with repeating UTIs, and I've had to go in for lots of blood work. And Annalie, every single time I've gone to the doctor getting my blood work, I've passed out.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I think like this is what it is.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
it's
You
trauma.
completely, definitely, without question. And there's a, yeah, you've gone into the flop trauma response to keep yourself. It's like the ultimate dissociation flop. You've gone into that to kind of dissociate from perceived pain, from these. A lot of people that I work with that have had, because this might resonate as well. A lot of people that I work with that have maybe lost a loved one and done sort of the last moments with a loved one in hospice or hospital care. I've had a lot of that, people that I've worked with. They suddenly find themselves having trouble traveling and they can't work out why. And one of the reasons is that we're so sensitive, and you'll be sensitive to the smell, right? So in airports, they often use the same kinds of disinfectants and cleaning products that they use in hospitals. See your face.
Oh my
Yeah.
gosh. What? So
So
they're
you,
re-triggered.
yeah. So a lot of people are all of a sudden like, why can't I take a flight since my dad died? It's not that. It's that God love you. You spent two of the most difficult weeks of your life at the end of life with one of your parents, and then you don't know why, but we tagged, and you've gone back in, and you've been completely overwhelmed, and that's causing this horrible feeling. But now we're in a different place, and we're like, but why am I feeling like this in this place? And you start making different choices. So yeah, for you, there's definitely trauma rooted, and you were younger then. I hope it didn't happen, but I suspect it did. There's a hierarchy, rank, medical, silly girl, like all of this kind of thing. And like, it also, I mean, it's pretty horrible being tested from young, like, are you pregnant? Shame. Get the shame bell out again. Hope you're not pregnant. Let's get the shame bell out. Like, oh God, what am I pregnant?
Whoa.
Like being shamed, being judged, being tested, being like, I mean, I don't know how it works in the States exactly, but when you're 16 in the UK, you get this invitation, and it's not to a party. It's for a like pap test. It's for, we call it a smear test, a gynecological exam, which for anyone listening to this is absolutely horrible and incredibly
Horrible.
painful. And you're winched open with this great big metal thing and scrub, oh, this doesn't hurt. It does. It's never not hurt me, and then you wonder why, we get. And I learned something is in my book. Actually, I interviewed an expert in this, but at some point we don't give consent and they carry on. This does hurt me actually. Please, can we stop? Can I have a minute? No, I just need to check this bit. I've withdrawn consent. I withdrew consent, and you carried on. And you're in a period of, you're in a position of rank, and you've carried on with this. I saw on Dua Lipa, her Service 95. Someone wrote about this the other week, and I was like, thank God someone else is writing about this, because we've just had so much trauma. And the medical system, when it's great, it's great, but there are times when it's not great, and you're too young. And I appreciate maybe it's for health purposes and screening things, but the way it's done is agony, frankly. And then you're told the whole time that didn't hurt. So again, don't trust me, don't trust myself. What's wrong with it? Hurt me. I'm feeling I felt too young to be exposed in that way, in that position, in front of strangers, and I wasn't ready to be opened up in that way, but here I am, and I'm told that I'm wrong for feeling anything. So we learn to close it down, and then we wonder why we struggle to achieve pleasure. Like, there's so much.
These messages are everywhere. I mean, even thinking about like the pap smear, like recently I was, my gyno, she's a woman, she left, and I had to go in to get a pap smear. And they told me that there was a man who was going to be my doctor for the day. And like, I'm not comfortable with that. Like, I was like, not feeling this. And I think the nurse, I told the nurse that like I was a little bit nervous, like I felt safe opening up to her. I hear her go tell the doctor, and they're like talking about it. I can literally hear through the door. What the heck? This is so inappropriate. And like, here I am spreading my legs, like, pardon my French, but it was so invasive. And just the fact that, like, in that moment, I remember like gaslighting myself. I'm like, I'm making a bigger deal out of this than it really is. Like, it's a doctor, like, all of these things. And it's just crazy when you highlight this and we break it down and we actually sit as women and be like, this is actually like not okay. And we have every right to not be okay with it. But the fact that our society like makes us feel like it's okay.
There is this just the system, like doctor, patient,
Yep.
teachers, government, you know, like there are just too many of these, like I say, like sort of patriarchal structures. And the fact that, again, it was a, thanks, Queen. Thanks for bloody, I've come and told you. I was, you know, you're saying that. I was thinking, thank God you did that. Because that does take courage. I don't care what people say, like voicing something in a system like that. Actually, I don't feel comfortable. Please, could I have a lady? Like, that takes guts because you do feel like you're going to get judged. And then you've been confided in another woman who's meant to be polishing our crown, and she's gone off to like basically mock you. But oh, thanks, babe. Cheers. That's gonna do wonders for my confidence in this area. Like,
Exactly.
really? Yeah. Can we please stop doing that to one another? Like, and again, and also you're in a like a caring profession. Maybe, you know, that that's part of the kind of training and protocol. So I'm really sorry that happened, darling. But
It's
I mean, I'm
okay.
hearing it so much. It's actually not okay. And I hear it so much, and I think it's so damaging to us reclaiming or even being able to own our pleasure. And then it's like, well, I hope you're being a massive sexual bitch and like having all your needs met and like loving life and, you know, getting off everyone. Like, actually, no, because I just had a really awful time and I keep getting UTIs. And every time I go back, I pass out. And then I did tell someone I wasn't comfortable. And then I had a really even more horrible time. So to be honest, not swinging up the lampshades right now, like, you
Wow.
know.
Wow. I mean, now I'm thinking like more deeply about everything and how I operate like intimately, like all of these things. Like it's all connected. And I think we really just need to practice like fierce self-compassion and hold ourselves through that. And even like in times of like feeling like, you know, trauma's coming up or feeling triggered, like I'm curious to hear from you. Like, what are the steps that we can take? I'm not sure if there's anything that we can do in that moment, or even if it's like post-trauma. Like, what can we do as women to support ourselves regardless of those moments?
I love that you asked me that question, and there is. I mean, the most helpful thing to do is to recognize what's happening. Okay, I am experiencing a trauma response. Like, I mean, a good way of me describing it is when you start to feel the floor moving from underneath you. So, yeah, I think most of us resonate. It's like when you get that message drop, and you're like, oh, you know, or yeah, you walk back into the doctor's office, and you literally are feeling the floor moving, you know, or. You're in a space and you're suddenly feeling like really panicked, you need to get out. Like, that is the beginning of that's maybe your like 5 second warning, you know, not even. So just even to go, okay, I'm experiencing trauma. The main thing is not to think there's anything wrong with you, as in like, okay, my body is trying to keep me safe in this moment. That's interesting, right? What is it that's making me feel unsafe? Is it an individual? Is it the environment? Is it, you know, what is it that is making me feel unsafe in this moment? And if you can change it, do, you know, as in if you need to take a step outside or whatever it might be, like, you know, if you have some agency, please use it. But the other thing is just to be kind of remembering this conversation is that your brain is trying to slip into, I know you don't tend to drive stick, but like it's trying to slip you into gear. It's trying to slip you into one of the trauma responses. So just notice what's happening to you. Like, you know, it can be as you know, when you so you're out and about and someone maybe says something a bit rude to you and you don't respond. You know how you said with that guy and like you don't answer back. And then afterwards you've got like every answer, like, why didn't I say this? Or why didn't I
Yes,
send
the
a
worst.
yeah, and you have what's well, because you were in trauma. Like people just think, oh, like it was tongue-tied, or I can't, and then it manifests. Oh, I can't speak up. I won't be any good at presentations. How can I do this job when I couldn't even answer that person back when they were rude to me? That was trauma. That was trauma. and you won't feel like somebody else. Okay. So it's just understanding that this is your body and your system trying to keep you alive. So you can have a conversation with your system, you know. You can be like, actually, no, we're good. No, we're good. Like, I'm okay. You know, I've looked around, I'm good. Or like I say, when you can start feeling, if you're aware of what the trigger is, like place, people, thing, if you can remove yourself from that for a minute or remove the offending article, then good, because you understand what's happening there. The other thing is to do some of the stuff that's keeping your prefrontal cortex online. So, I mean, that is counting, any kind of counting. If you can walk, walk. You know, you see people pacing. I don't know, when you take an important phone call, when you see people pacing up and down, that is discharging stress from your body when you walk. Wow. So it's always good to have like, I don't know, maybe if you're going to have a difficult conversation, if you're walking, your eyes are laterally scanning, as I mentioned, the horizon. Lateral movement is also keeping your prefrontal cortex online. As we move, we're discharging stress from our body. As well, you might see people like tapping their legs or shaking it, you know, like kind of like just tapping. You can also do some tapping. You can do some tapping and you can do some breathing, like whatever works for you. So, but for me, and there have been some situations that I've walked into and I've almost blacked out, as you did, and hospital settings from having a horrendous thing happen to me before and not putting two and two together and then walking in for what should have been something quite nice and going, like literally. And the thing that stopped it was, okay, I know what's happening. I know what's happening. And looking around and going, I am safe, you know, or doing the things I need to do to make myself safe. And if that includes asking someone to come with you, asking for help, like moving your, like people, places and things. What I would beg of people though is, trauma has this way, and it's shame. Shame is the thing that's left behind. And shame is this voice that says that you're the only one. Oh, Skylar, you're the only one that passes out of the doctors. What a loser. Oh God, what an absolute loser you are. Well, you're going to be, how are you going to have a baby in the future if you want one? How are you ever going to go through anything?
You.
You know, how are you ever going to go through anything difficult when you can't even like stay awake for whatever, like, you know, pap smear, like what a loser you are. How are you going to get a good job? How are you going to, no wonder that guy said that you were too much. Like, right. Am I somewhere near the inner voice?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is shame, because shame can only have a hold of you if you believe you're the only one. And I'm telling you now, I mean, you're the only one of you, but you are not the only one. And as soon as you can find a way, my book is entirely about shame. And I've written things in there that are, in theory, so shameful about myself. My story opens with a sexual assault case of a client who's gone in with her own name.
Wow.
This woman is a boss, very, very high profile in business. And she's gone, no, Annalie, put my name in. Put my name in. Like, that is the kind of stuff we're doing here, because I didn't want to write a how-to book. I wanted to write a book where people read it and went, oh my God, that's me. And if that's me, that means I'm not alone. And if I'm not alone, that means shame is wrong. It gives me hope. So that's what I want to say to you and to anyone listening is, do not listen to shame. Don't let shame change your, it grows roots. Like I say, and then suddenly you get, I don't know, I don't want to go to that doctor's appointment anymore. Or actually, I'll just break up with my boyfriend, because it's easier actually than me having awkward sex or feeling pain or telling anyone. So I'll just be single and live with a cat forever, she says, living with a cat. But like, you know, like I do live with a cat. Yeah, so like, you know, all these sorts of things. Like we do suddenly find reasons and excuses, which initially started as because we were confused and we didn't know what to do. But then we've changed the shape of our life, and we don't believe our potential is possible because shame's telling us a different version of things. Don't listen.
I literally got goosebumps and a little bit emotional. So I cannot be more excited to read your book. And the fact that, I love what you said about that it's not a how-to and you're sharing stories. And I think the community part of this is so critical. And I think that's one of the reasons why I love having this platform, because I have girls listening and women who they're like, that is me. You're not alone. We're here. We're in it with you. And I just want to thank you, Annalie, because like, this is what we need to be talking about. And I could not be more honored to have you on this platform to share some of the tools. And I think this is a great pathway into a section that I love to call syllabus steps. So if you have any additional, you shared a lot of juicy tips today, but any, I don't know, books or daily non-negotiables, activity, podcasts, whatever it might be that has helped you on your personal journey of really healing that people-pleasing voice to shame, to fight or flight, to really, you know, build love within yourself and self-compassion, like any additional tips would be super helpful.
Of course, I would love to. So one of the best books, because I have talked a lot about sexual assault and about our bodies. One of the best books I think anyone could possibly read is Emily Nagoski, Come As You Are.
Okay.
And she's also done a workbook that you can, I mean, it's an absolutely incredible book. I learned so much from that. She's an amazing educator and she is fantastic. But you can also just have a look her up on Spotify. She's on lots of podcasts. So yeah, Come As You Are is a book that was incredibly helpful. I would say I also love Pussy by Regina Thomas Hauser, Mama Gina. Yeah, I used to
love
reading
it. I love it.
So my book, I won't say the name right now, but mine is not, it's a statement word. It's a whole aesthetic. Like I want it as a movement. I want it everywhere. So it's kind of like a, you know, we're in the movement, we're in the club. So that was a good book because that was kind of talking about putting you first. I mean, the name's Pussy, it's provocative. It is about female pleasure, but really it's about, you know, we abandon and try and meet the needs of other people first. And this is about putting you front and center. Like she talks in one bit about saving the best, you know, like, oh, you save up that expensive body cream. For who? You know, like it's, we'd only light that candle when a guest is coming over. Like, no, I'm the most important person. You know? So like, don't save these things. Don't save the best for last kind of thing, you know, use them for yourself. And it's a really interesting story she gives. She's again, like kind of an older lady. She's talking through all the things that women may have come to her with. She created a sisterhood, and I think that was quite nice. So cool stories. Like, so those two would be really good books. I really like Chris Williamson. He's a Brit. His podcast, I mean, yours is obviously fantastic as well. I like his solo episodes. I think it's quite interesting because he is a man, but he speaks very vulnerably in the solo episodes. Like he doesn't dress it up. I listened to one quite literally last week. And he was talking about you know, he's very successful and by all accounts, but he was talking about unworthiness, feelings of unworthiness, health issues. So I think that's quite refreshing. Mm-hmm. I always find that quite a refreshing read. And tools wise, I would just encourage people to get away from, do you know what? I'd like to encourage people to do a to don't list. So I hate this wellness aesthetic of get up at 5 a.m. and journal and make a ceremonial matcha and oh my god, like, and then decant everything you've bought into tiny little containers and film it and then make 10,000 different cubes of ice, and if you haven't done any of that in your Stanley cup, you're a fucking loser and you've ruined your day. Like, stop, you know. So please, can we have a to don't list? And I would like you to put all the shoulds on there of shit that makes you unhappy and just do something that you actually love. I love making a coffee and my bedroom overlooks my garden. There is nothing I enjoy more than going back up to bed with a coffee, drinking a coffee, not matcha, and with oat milk, oh, what a slut, you know, like, or full of all the gums and terrible things you shouldn't have. That gives me pleasure. Looking over my beautiful garden, just taking those few moments to like let the caffeine kick in, that gives me pleasure. Like, you know, what are the rules that work for you, and what even, again, like, too much, what is wellness for you? Let's get away from this list of things that are frankly based on consumerism that are there to should you. Let's just stop shoulding.
I freaking love you. This is what's been bubbling in my system. I mean, if anything, I mean, we could have a total other episode about this, which I would love to with you in person in LA. But it's like, that is the opposite of wellness. Again, that's us putting ourselves in boxes and it's so suffocating. And wellness is not a one size fits all. Like, it's scary. Anyways, I could talk about this for hours.
Yeah.
I think, Annalie, if you could go back to your 26 self, so my age, what is one piece of advice you would tell yourself in that moment?
So I was working big corporate in London, in the city at that time, and I understand now why I was doing this. So I had childhood trauma, very violent childhood. I understand that I was trying to create safety for myself financially, so financial security, working in the city, killing myself in a job. What I didn't know is at 26, I was 3 years off a catastrophic burnout. So, and that was completely armoring. I was living with armor. I wouldn't be vulnerable. I learned to push my emotion, my sensitivity, my feminine self, if you like. I lived out of my masculine because it kept me safe. So I have huge compassion for that version of me then. But it's been the biggest piece of work for me to embody that and speak to it and be able to be vulnerable. So I would give her a massive hug and say, babe, it's okay. And you don't need to kind of be doing all of this. Like, you can ask for help. I would say ask for help, because I didn't ask for help. I didn't ask for anything. I just, you know, you can be very active and very social and you can talk all the time and never really say what's going on, not lying, but you can do a great job of how are you? Yeah. Tell me about you. What are you doing? How are you doing? And I did a brilliant, we can call it deflection, but I had a great line in that. And I have complete compassion for why, but I would say to my 26th version of myself, ask for help. Ask for help.
I needed to hear that today.
Good. Yeah, please do ask for help. And funnily enough, I think I had recurring UTIs around then. Weirdly enough,
crazy.
I think that was one of the early symptoms that I didn't know. You know, again, shameful. Ooh, who's been having a good time? Well, clearly not, because I'm in agony. On a 12-hour flight to Mexico.
Literally.
There's not enough cranberry juice in the world.
Yep. Oh, no. I had 14 in 1 year. So that was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Last question for you. It's a fill in the blank.
Ooh, yeah.
Regardless of blank, I am blank. So this is like your affirmation statement to end this beautiful episode together.
Regardless of limitations, I am free.
Cheers, beautiful, incredible.
New episodes drop every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.